Welcome to the presentation of a lecture from Gnostic Radio, a free public service from Telema Press. Gnostic Radio broadcasts free lectures from the Gnostic tradition of Samael on Vior. Gnosis is the root wisdom of all the world's great religions. Gnosis is a universal doctrine containing the precise science to free the soul from suffering. To find additional information about Gnosis, such as books, videos, and online courses, or to engage in online discussions, visit our website at GnosticTeachings.org. This lecture was made possible through the generous support of listeners like you. For more information or to make a donation, visit GnosticTeachings.org. Now, with heartfelt wishes for the end of suffering, we begin the lecture. May all beings be happy.
The Buddha Maitreya. This is the title of this lecture, which is related with a self-realization of the being. When we, in Gnosticism, we talk about Buddha, we understand that all of us have their own particular individual Buddha's nature, and that every individual has that Buddha nature. It is stated that the stones, the plants, the animals, people have that Buddha nature. So then, we had to investigate, what is that Buddha nature? What is that that we call Buddha nature? To understand this, I have to tell you a tale by a Zen master. A disciple asked a master of Zen Buddhism, "Master, do I possess Buddha's nature?" And the master answered him, "No, you do not." And then the disciple says, "But I heard that the stones have Buddha's nature, the plants have a Buddha's nature, animals have Buddha's nature, and all of us people have Buddha's nature." And then the Zen master answers and says, "Yes, it is true. The stones, the plants, animals, people have Buddha's nature. But you do not. Why? Asked the disciple. Because you are asking about it. That was the answer. In other words, to recognize or to comprehend Buddha's nature is nothing related with the intellect. Anybody can read many books or hear many lectures about the Buddha or the story or the life of Buddha and not to enjoy that Buddha's nature or Buddha nature. And it is because, as I said, it's not a matter of intellectualism or like people think, like memorizing scriptures and all that. Because the main teachings of Buddhism is the awakening of the consciousness. Remember that the word Buddha means enlightened one. To be enlightened means to be awakened. To be there second after second, moment after moment, enjoying that Buddha's nature that we have and that everybody has. But from the moment that we ask, do I have that Buddha's nature? Then, of course, we are implying that we are not enjoying that state of enlightenment or that instant of remembering or being awakened. And this is precisely what we have to understand when we talk about Buddha. It means something that we have to live, something that we have to experience second after second, moment after moment. Unfortunately, we are divided into two lines or two directions. The one that goes inside and the other that goes outside. Buddha itself, or that nature that we are talking here, is what we call the innermost. Is that we call the monad, the spirit. That spark that is the very foundation of life within everything. When we investigate any particular matter, we discover that in the very depth there is always a unity that is called a monad.
Hey guys.
And that monad that spirit is what we call Buddha. In the Tree of Life, which is a hieroglyphic that explain all the different parts of a true human being, we find the explanation of the different inner parts that we have within. And of course, we discover that the monad, as we explain in many lectures, is related with this second triangle of the Tree of Life. The Tree of Life is formed by three triangles. The first triangle is related with that triangle that we call the logoic triangle or the divine triangle related with creation, where we find the three primary forces related with the law that creates. The positive, the negative, and the neutral forces that must unite in a single point in order to originate any creation. The second triangle is what we call the triangle of the monad, which is that particular spirit, that particular unity that we call Buddha, or Buddhism is called Buddha, which is formed by also three parts, which is the spirit, the divine consciousness, and the human consciousness. The spirit itself is that what we call the Buddha. Below the second triangle, we find the third triangle related with what we call the mind, the emotion, and the very foundation of life of our physical body, which is, of course, below, which is called Malkut. This physical body in this tree of life is called Malkut. So then you have, we will say, a simple explanation of the tree of life, because every sephira, every triangle implies a lot of wisdom. But now we are going just to simplify in order for you to comprehend what is that Buddha nature within us. So the Buddha nature that we talk is related with the second triangle. We find, for instance, the explanation of this second triangle in the life of Buddha, or how Buddha Gautama was engendered. According to the story of Buddhism, they state that the mother of Buddha, her name was Mahamaya. When you study Sanskrit, you discover that the word Maya means illusion. And it is related to matter. It says that everything is illusion, because everything that has a beginning has an end, so has no reality. And this is how matter is. In any part of the universe, sooner or later, for instance, this planet Earth, you said, is real, physical. It's a lot of matter here. But with time, it will die. According to Gnosticism, we know that all planets, later on, after they give what they have to give, root races, life, they become moons. What is a moon? A moon is a dead planet that eventually transforms itself into cosmic dust. So what is the reality? When you see cosmic dust in the space, those are the remains of moons that before becoming moons were planets. So it was just an illusion. That's why we state that everything is mind or mental. Because when you think one thought, immediately that disappears and appears another. And eventually all matter, mental matter, will disappear as well. Will finish. This is what in Sanskrit is called Maha Mambandara, great cosmic day, where everything appears. But when that disappears, it's called Maha Pralaya, great cosmic night. So of course, everything, every matter itself has its Maha Mamantara and Maha Pralaya. For instance, right now, we physically, we are in our own particular small Mamantara or manifestation. We are physically alive. But sooner or later, we become old. We decay physically. We go to the grave. And we disintegrate. That will be our pralaya, our cosmic diet. So this physical body is illusion. Even though he said this is real, but it has no reality.
Is it a good illusion or a bad illusion?
The questions, please, at the end of the lecture.
Oh,
yeah. So, it could be good or bad illusion, doesn't matter.
Is it vain? Maybe.
So, the reality with that which is eternal, which never changes, is precisely what we call our own inner Buddha. That spark of life. That is an intelligence that organizes any type of matter, whether small or large. So according to Buddhism, I said, Buddha was engendered by Maha Maya. When we talk of Maha in esotericism, we always play that in the upper level. Maha is related, of course, with the superior forces of creation, which are always placed in the Sephira Da'at, which means knowledge. The Sephira Da'at in the Tree of Life is below the first triangle. Keter, Chokmah, Binah, or that triangle that we stated is related with the three primary forces, the forces of creation. So those forces of creation manifest, of course, in this mysterious sephira called Da'at, which means knowledge, that in Greek we call it Gnosis. The way in which Buddha was created, it's stated that a white elephant came and placed a lotus flower in the womb of Maha Maya that was sleeping. Of course, that is a symbol of the matter, or the chaotic matter, which is in repose, which is not active. But it is engendered by the Holy Spirit, or by Shiva, as they say in Sanskrit, in Hinduism. Because the white elephant is an animal that represents fertility. There are many animals or many symbols that are taken in esotericism in order to symbolize the power of creation. So, the elephant is one of them, but it has to be white in order to represent the purity of that creation. And of course, in the mythology of Christianity, we find the white dove as a symbol of fertility. You see, always white. And of course, as you remember, the white dove was the one that came into the womb of the Virgin Mary and engendered the body of Jesus. So it is the same symbol. Here, the white elephant symbolizes Shiva, or the Holy Spirit, that comes and engenders Buddha in the womb of Mahamaya. But this is a symbol of something that is happening above. I mean, within, in the internal dimensions, in the internal universes. It's not physical. This is what we have to understand. It is related to our own particular individual Buddha. With this, I am stating that also we have our own particular Jesus. So that is the spirit, the inner must, we call it, that everybody has within. Of course, that Buddha, that spark, which is engendered by the Holy Spirit, is the very beginning of, we will say, of our own particular individuality, which is related with the monad above. Because that spirit also receives that in Sanskrit is called buddhi. Buddhi, wisdom, or the divine consciousness, which abides always above. So that's why in esotericism we said that the monad is a trio of spirit, divine consciousness, and human consciousness. So that is above, in the sixth dimension. It doesn't belong to this three-dimensional world. The only thing that we have that belongs to the three-dimensional world is this material body, which is called physical body. But of course, within this physical body, we feel thoughts, we think, we feel emotions, but obviously they are not three-dimensional. We sense them, but they abide in another dimension. And beyond, of course, is the consciousness that gives us understanding and comprehension, that is beyond the mind. And we feel that comprehension and understanding of things, we feel it inside the physical body. But it's not physical. It's connected. But it exists. Because we sense it, but we cannot prove it. If I tell you, can you bring me a piece of your intelligence here? You cannot bring it. It's impossible. Or can you put one thought here of you, please? Show me your mind. Well, you can express what you're thinking. But to put materially speaking, a piece of mind or a piece of emotion there, in order to see, oh, this is your emotion. This is how it is within you. Obviously, it's impossible, because it's not material, it's not physical, it's not three-dimensional. The same, that which is beyond the consciousness, or beyond the buddhi, which is the Buddha, which is called the enlightened one. That is beyond the consciousness. But scarcely, you see, people grasp that. Because usually they are not in there. People are in the physical world, identify with matter, identify with the circumstances of life and with this society. And that's why in the beginning I told you, when that disciple asked the Buddha, when that disciple asks to the Zen master, do I have the Buddha nature? The master answered, no, you do not. Why? Because it is very difficult to experience, to sense that Buddha nature within you. For that, you have to remember, we will say, yourself. To remember yourself means to remember your being, your own entity. The problem is that when we think about self, we always imagine a shape, a form of something. So, in this case, when we talk about the Buddha nature, it has no shape. Because that is what we call the spirit. And you cannot play the spirit in a cage. or in a shape, because then it ceases to be in spirit. The matter, yes. But in this case, the Buddha itself is something that, a quality, an element that we have within that can take any shape, but doesn't need the form. And that's precisely the innermost, the spirit in each one of us. Can penetrate within you and live, because every single atom of our physical body has a part of that Buddha nature, of that spirit. Part of it, not all of it. Because without it, the physical body cannot be alive. It's impossible. Because that is the very source of life. You see, it goes like that. The Buddha, and then the divine consciousness, and then the human consciousness, mind, emotion, and finally the physical body. And of course, in order to, for any Buddha of that nature to manifest in any dimension, it needs the three primary forces above it. These three primary forces above it is what is, which are called in Hinduism, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and what in Christianity we call Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Those are forces. They're not people. Because if the Buddha nature within us has no form, obviously those forces which are above the Buddha nature have no form. In conjunction, the three primary forces were called in Egypt Osiris Ra, symbolizing the sun, the strength of the sun, Osiris Ra. And Buddhism, they call it Avalokiteshvara. And of course, according to Buddhism, anybody that becomes united and aware not only of his own particular Buddha nature, but which is above Buddha nature, which are the three primary forces, they call it Buddha Maitreya. And this is precisely the title of the lecture, Buddha Maitreya. There is a master in Buddhism whose name is Maitreya. But generally, that name is taken in order to point an individual that get in contact with his own Buddha nature and beyond, which is Avalokiteshvara, Maitreya. Or, as they say in Buddhism, in Chenrenzi. That's another word. That's why, for instance, Tibetans, they say that the Dalai Lama is a Buddha incarnation. It doesn't mean that he is the reincarnation of the Buddha Gautama. No. His own Buddha is self-realized. He self-realized his own Buddha in other lives. He was dedicated in order to be aware of that nature. Thus, he became a Buddha in previous life. And that Buddha incarnated or reincarnated in Tibet and became the Dalai Lama. So there are many Buddhas. But the life of Buddha Gautama symbolizes the way in which the Buddha is being born and developed. This is something that we have to explain. As the way that when you read the life of Jesus of Nazareth, is the way in which a Buddha becomes united with Christ. And what is Christ? Well, Christ is a Greek word, which is equal to Avalokiteshvara. It's a force. So also, it is stated that the Dalai Lama is an incarnation of Avalokiteshvara. It means that he is united with that force. This is a very high level. The very degrees in Buddha, in the development of our own Buddha. But we have to understand is that there is within, not outside. It's something that we develop inside. It has nothing to do with reading books. Because you can memorize all the books of Buddhism and all the books of Christianity or Hinduism, and you will not be in that level of Buddha or enlightenment. But every one of us has a little bit of that light. But the goal is to develop the 100% of that. And that's precisely why we come into this world. It is stated, for instance, in Buddhism, that after a week, more or less, that Gautama Buddha was born from Mahamaya, which is a symbol of a superior force that enters and places that Buddha into matter. He says that Maha Prajapati, the sister of Mahamaya, took over the responsibility of being in charge of that baby. Now here we have to understand the symbol of that. Maha is above, and that Maha Prajapati symbolizes, of course, the lower nature that is the physical body. Because the superior forces of Maya, that chaotic matter, engenders our own Buddha, but we had to take care of it. In other words, this physical body that we have is that matter that take care of that baby. Do you understand that? So you physically have the responsibility of your own baby, your own Buddha. But unfortunately in this life, nobody cares about it. Same thing, the symbol of, you know, with Jesus. Mary, the mother of Jesus, symbolizes the mater. You see, even in Latin, mother is mater, which is in English for matter. And that word really is in relation with matter, which is always the symbol of the feminine, eternal feminine. We transform it in different shapes. So then you find that in both cases we talk about virgins. You see? The Virgin Mahamaya engendered Buddha. The Virgin Mary engendered Jesus. And there is a word there that is equal, virgin. To acquire that virginity is precisely the point of the work in Buddhism or Christianity and any other religion. So, we physically have to take care of it. Now, listen to this and watch carefully. Buddha, Mary, of course, his wife. And he had a son. The son was called Rahula. When we study Christianity or Judaism, we find similarities about this symbol that we're talking here. And now let me go into Judaism. Because in the previous lectures, we stated that Chesed is what the Jewish people call Abraham. And this word Abraham means exalted father. Well, this Abraham is precisely the same as the Buddha we had within. In the symbol of Judaism, it is stated that Abraham had a son, a descendant, of course, into Egypt, which is a physical body, and engender a son whose name was Isaac. And development of that Isaac, I told you in other lectures, is in relation with the divine consciousness. But here in Buddha, we find almost a similar symbol related with his son. Then later comes a disciple, his own disciple, and enter into the path of enlightenment. It's the same thing. But of course, we had to understand and comprehend enough that symbol in order to understand how that force descends into matter. Because that is within. Our Buddha descends into this physical body through the three primary forces. Because our own particular Buddha always utilizes the three forces of creation, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Or Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, or as we said in synthesis, the three primary forces synthesized in Avalokiteshvara. Physically, in our physical body, we have those three primary forces, or these three forces that descend. Because without these three primary forces, our own particular Buddha cannot manifest. And when you investigate the physical body, you find that we have three nervous systems. You always refer to these three nervous systems. The first one, we said, is the central nervous system. That is related with the brain, the spinal column. It's called the cerebral and spinal nervous system. The central nervous system. That is the first ray, which is a nervous system, that captures the force or the primary force of the Father from above and enters into the physical body. The second is the grand sympathetic nervous system, which is in relation with the second force. And the third is the parasympathetic. That is also called vagus. So in the physical body, we have three rays, or three nervous systems. In this case, this is how it manifests in the physical body, that channel, the three primary forces. And this is how we manage to be alive. These three nervous systems is what we call the three brains. Of course, the objective of our own particular Buddha is to control these three primary forces in order to acquire enlightenment. So these three primary forces descends and creates many things in our physical body. But unfortunately, not under the direction of our own innermost, our own Buddha. because we commit many mistakes. We forgot about it. You know. The good thing will be if that Buddha is taken care of by Mahaprajapati, which will be, of course, this matter will dedicate itself to the path or the self-realization. That's why everybody that takes that path is called a monk or a nun. In this case, for instance, in women, when they decide to follow the path of Buddhism, they become nuns. And they say that they have to imitate, or they are imitating, the life of Mahaprajapati, that was the foster mother of Gautama Buddha. But we have to understand that Mahaprajapati is a symbol of your own matter. And if you want to enter into the path in order to receive enlightenment, well, you had to become, in this case, if you are a man, a monk. If you are a woman, a nun. Right? But that's a symbol. Because if you visualize what is a monk and what is a nun, it's somebody that takes care of the sexual energy. In every religion. And I'm not saying here that all the monks, all the nuns, they are chaste. But that implies no sexual activity. No sexual activity from the ordinary way in which people use the sexual energy. So when you enter into the path as a nun or as a monk, means that you are going to take care of your sexual energy in a wise way. That's the meaning of it. And then become a virgin. If you want, of course, to take care of your own Buddha. But if you don't follow chastity, how are you going to take care of Buddha? Because Buddha needs to grow up. And the energy that makes him to grow up inside and to develop is the sexual energy. And this is something that you have to comprehend. That's why Buddha Gautama was married. And he had a son. But he had a son in the same way that everybody has it. In the case of Abraham, I'm telling you in the Bible, he has also a son in the same way that everybody has it. It's called Ishmael. And he has that son with an Egyptian slave. That Egyptian slave is, in other words, the same matter. That you have to understand that. Because there are two aspects here in Judaism that we have to understand. First, Sa-Ra, which brings me into my memory the two polarities. Sa, the moon, and Ra, the sun. The two polarities, Ida-Pingala, which rises in the spinal column. That's the wife, the real wife of Abraham. But the other is a slave, which is the same matter. Agar is called. That's that matter which is a slave of the physicality. So of course, the power that we use in order to multiply comes from inside, always. That power comes from the Holy Spirit through Abraham. Because the Holy Spirit that the Bible calls Jehovah is the one that tells Abraham, I will make of you a great nation. And I will make of your seed an inheritance that will worship me. It's the same thing that happened with Buddha. He engenders his first son, as everybody genders it, from the other matter, which in this case is his wife. But then he renounces his kingdom. And this is precisely what we had to do. But when you say, well, I have no kingdom. Yeah, you have a kingdom. The kingdom is called Malkut in Judaism, in Hebrew. Malkut means kingdom. So you have to renounce that kingdom. It means you have to renounce all the values and all of that you have through inheritance in your physical body. That we talk in other lectures. It doesn't mean that you have to have gold, silver, and to be very rich physically in order to abandon the kingdom. No. It's a process, a psychological process, in which you have to abandon little by little that kingdom. Because everything that is written there in the study of Buddha is also in within you. It's your physical body. When he abandoned his wife and his son, doesn't mean that he was irresponsible and he went there in the world and not taking care of his family. No. It means that by being with them, he was not with them. Or as Paul of Tarsus says, if you are being merry, behave as if you are not merry. Right? And this is only comprehensible when you know the great arcanum, when you know the mystery of chastity. Or the mystery why the Buddha, when he abandoned his wife and his son, he went and sit below a Bodhi tree. The Bodhi tree, which everybody knows, was a fig tree. The fig tree is a symbol of the feminine sexual forces. And when we talk about the feminine sexual forces, we always refer to the sexual organ. You see, this is the symbol in esotericism. When we talk about the physical body, we know it's always feminine. In Kabbalah, we said Malkut is feminine. You are a man here, masculine. Well, your symbol for your physicality, masculinity of your physical body here in Malkut is feminine. This is feminine. So always you have to understand that. The positive, the forces are above, masculine, and the below are feminine. So your physical body is feminine. And when you talk about your physical body, the lower part also is feminine. So your sexual organ, whether you have a masculine organ or a feminine organ, is always feminine. So if the Buddha said that he had to sit down at the foot of the tree of wisdom, Bodhi tree, and it's a fig tree, means that he's taking care of his sexual energy. Not in the way that everybody takes care, in the very degenerated way, but in the chaste way. That's the beginning. But for that you have to abandon your kingdom. Means your inheritance, your animal inheritance, and all that which are related with your three brains, which push you to be an animal, or to behave like any other. And that's the beginning of the awakening of your own particular Buddha. Because it is written also that the Buddha starts making penances and different sacrifices physically in order to have that enlightenment. But he discovered that extremes are no good and that he had to follow the middle path. And when that happened, when he realizes that the real path is in the mist, a woman appears. It doesn't appear a man. It's a woman. And this is very clear there. And she offers rice and milk in a bowl. That's a symbol of the yoni. The feminine yoni. It means that he, as a man, is going to start working with what we call tantra. Called sexual magic. Taking care, of course, because immediately when he eats the rice, which is the symbol of the seed, because in Asia, the symbol of the seed is rice. In Middle East, the symbol of the seed is called wheat. In America, in all the books are written that the symbol of the sexual seed is the corn. So we have three seeds here. Corn in America, rice in Asia, and wheat in the Middle East. But the three of them are the symbol of the sexual seed. So if that woman brings in rice to Buddha, means I offering you my help. And immediately when Buddha takes that rice, which means when he transmutes the sexual energy in chastity with the woman, immediately rejuvenates. He changes. He becomes healthy. And this is something that all the monks and nuns do not realize, do not see. That their inner Buddha nature needs the sexual energy. Many of them follow, like in Christianity, They say they have to be celibate, but they don't know why. How I know that we have to take care of the sexual energy, but I don't know. By tradition. But if we study from the tantric, Kabbalistic point of view, we understand that it is good to be a monk, to be a nun is good, but you have to marry. Begin like that, but there is a time when you will need a woman if you are a monk. And if you are a nun, you will need a monk and to marry there, and then you continue the path. Because that's what the teachings of Buddha is teaching out there. Receiving the bowl from that woman means sexual magic. And for that time, all the ordeals comes, all his development. He comes enlightened. But still, in this day and age, people think that they can receive the enlightenment, a complete development of their own Buddha, just by being in celibacy. That's wrong. There's no way. Because in order to descend, in order for the Buddha to descend into the physical world, needed the act, or the sexual act, of the elephant, which is chastity, with Mahamaya, which is the symbol of the superior forces, what we call in Kabbalah, Abba and Aima, the superior father and mother, which are in heaven. But here, of course, we have to also control our own matter and to take care of our own Buddha by being in chastity. That's the main thing. So that through the sexual act, the development, the spiritual development of that Buddha is shown. In the story of Buddha, you find that he starts fighting against demons, against the negative forces that are within him. But all the fight, everything that happened to him before becoming a completely enlightened one, is at the foot of the tree, the Bodhi tree, or the fig tree. That is showing us very clear that the whole work that we have to perform is with our feminine forces, with the sexual energy. It's called feminine because the woman is always the one that takes care of creation. The woman receives the sperm and takes 9 months, and all of her development of the life of any man or woman is always in the womb of any woman. And of course, that's the womb, the symbol. I don't recall now in Sanskrit, the womb is in the name. I guess in Mahaprajapati means womb or else. It is related with it. That means that we become the womb when we start working with the energy. And we dedicate all the forces that we have in the three nervous system to our own Buddha. Because he needs that, the three primary forces, in order to develop. Without the three primary forces, no Buddha can develop. You can develop in a certain level being a single, as a monk or as a nun. But beyond that, to acquire the 100% of development of your own particular individual Buddha is only possible if you sit at the foot of the Bodhi tree, and which is very clear is a fig tree related with the sexual energy. But remember that a woman brings a bowl of rice and milk, and milk is a symbol of wisdom. And after all that fight, the Buddha becomes enlightened. In other words, we will say, becomes a Buddha Maitreya. Because the whole enlightenment, the 100% of enlightenment of any Buddha is the level of the title of Maitreya. So anyone that reaches that level is a Maitreya. What we call in Christianity a resurrected master. When all the three primary forces of Avalokitesvara engender, enter, not only into Buddha, or our own particular individual Buddha, but in all the parts of that Buddha, because the first part of our own self, or the true self, is called Buddha. But then comes the divine consciousness, which is the divine consciousness of that Buddha. And then comes the human consciousness, which is us, that becomes the human consciousness of that Buddha. And then we have the mind, which becomes the mind of that Buddha. We have our emotions, that become the emotions of that Buddha. And then finally the physical body, which becomes the physical body of that Buddha. And then you have there an enlightened master. You see, that is what we call a master. The master itself, the guru, is the Buddha. Is Hesed, is the innermost. People here always have that big mistake. They think that the master is the personality. Because we build a personality, we come into this physical world. When we are born, our physical parents, they say, how we will name her or him? Oh, name him according to our ancestors or according to what my aunt or uncle said, and name her or name him this and that. And we have a name. Louis, Anthony, Christian, Pema, Richard, Suzanne, Liberto. Everyone has different name. But that's just the name that is passing through, passing by. Sooner or later, when we die, that name disappears. It's not eternal. The true name that we have is in our own particular Buddha. That's the real name. But the name that we have here is like a nickname. That sooner or later will disappear. Related with our personality. In our personality we said, oh, I was born in India, or I was born in Tibet, or I was born in Poland, right? Or I was born in Puerto Rico, or I was born in Colombia. So everyone has, he says, oh, but that was born there was that personality. And always that personality is what we have to disintegrate. We have to fight against that. Because that is our own particular kingdom. You see that? That is our own particular individual kingdom, Malkut, that Buddha renounced. You have to renounce that too. But you won't renounce that going into a mountain, into a cave. You go into the mountain, into a cave, you take all your kingdom inside that cave. And you say, oh yeah, I abandon my country, I abandon my family, my religion, and all that is within you. In your personality, in your mind, and everything is there. As when the Master says, people that go into other places and hidden into the forest, they hide all their mundane into that forest. All their kingdom is there. So, understand that we don't need to go any place in order to abandon the kingdom. In order to abandon the kingdom, you have to work psychologically. You have to meditate. You have to eradicate that from you by meditation. That's why the main thing that Buddha taught us there at the foot of the Bodhi tree was meditation. He was always sitting there meditating. Very clear. Without meditation, we don't abandon the kingdom. That abandoning of the kingdom is a process, step after step. And the development and the growing of another nature, which is the Buddha nature. But for that, of course, as we said in many lectures, that Buddha has to be born first. has to be born inside through initiation. Because the whole change that happened in that Buddha at the Bodhi tree is a change, it's a birth. That comes with the sexual energy. I told you that in Judaism, the first birth, the first spiritual birth, is the birth of Isaac, the son of Abraham. That Abraham is the same Buddha that engenders Isaac, which means the spiritual inheritance. And that's precisely the union of our own spirit with the divine consciousness. When you start working and taking care of your own Buddha inside of you, and then, as I said, your matter first has to become virgin. But it's a process. You take care of your sexual energy. And when that woman comes and offers the bowl of rice to that Buddha, meaning that he starts practicing Tantra, sexual magic. And then the first birth comes inside. That first birth is the union of the divine consciousness, Buddhi, with the spirit. So the union of Buddhi with the spirit is what we call the first bird, the birth of that enlightenment. That's the first enlightenment. How do we do that? By rising the kundalini in the physical body. The kundalini is a force that awakens only when Buddha takes the rice from the bowl of that woman, meaning through sexual magic. Because that bowl, I repeat, is the yoni. If there is no sexual union, that birth cannot happen. The kundalini cannot awaken. That kundalini is the serpent that rises and that protects Buddha from that flood. But that happens after, you see, the woman brings the bowl with rice. Means that he has to rise that serpent. That serpent is the same mother, Maha Maya, that is now rising in him. Because was dead, but now is rising, is resuscitating in him. That kundalini, when you rise that kundalini, all the 33 vertebrae, from the coccyx to the pineal gland to the root of your nose, then your inner Buddha, your inner master, your inner guru, your innermost, your spirit, extracts, you see, extracts that development, spiritual development, from your physical body. And that extraction goes into the divine consciousness, his divine consciousness. And the union of that divine consciousness with the spirit is what we call the first initiation, the birth of the master. It's just somebody that started to walk on the path that goes to nirvana. That's the beginning, the first step to nirvana. So then we said, we will say that a new master is born. But it's a baby master. In heaven, in that level, because the master is always the innermost, the Buddha. That's his first enlightenment. But that Buddha has to grow up and needs to develop, to grow up in the vital body. So then he needs to rise the serpent of the vital body. He needs to rise the serpent of the emotional body. He needs to rise the serpent of his mental body. And finally, rise the serpent of the causal body, or body of will. And then he acquires, in that development, a human consciousness that becomes united with that divine consciousness. And then we have there a marvelous master, which is a trio, which in Sanskrit is called Atman Buddhi Manas. Superior mind. It's called the abstract mind, Tifereth. And then you said, a new master is born, a true master. But when we talk about the master, talking about the Buddha. It has nothing to do with the personality here. When we hear sometimes some Gnostics that call the master such and such, and they name the personality, the name of that person, they say, what an ignorant. That personality is just being to disappear. The true master is always the Buddha, the innermost. And he acquires that mastery with work, by working in his own matter. But the personality has to disappear sooner or later. So if you address somebody, call it master or your holiness, immediately you have to visualize the innermost, the inner Buddha of that person that you are naming holiness or Buddha or master. Because if you only think that it's that physical body, you are wrong. That physical body will die and disappear. Of course, the physical body receives the energy of that inner Buddha and manifests through that physical body. But the reality is within. It's not in the physical body. Because if the reality was in the physical body, then the physical body will be eternal. And this is why we have to understand. We understand, for instance, Jesus, a great master. But we visualize his inner being. And we know that that is the master. But people, for instance, in this day and age, they ended worshipping the personality of Jesus. And they think that Jesus has to come physically. The second coming, they say. And also we find in Buddhism, that says that Buddha promised that he was going to come, or a great master, was a great Buddha was going to come. That is the Buddha Maitreya in this day and age. And people are waiting for something physical. That comes from inside and develops. And when that Buddha Maitreya is fully developed, and then you see, this is the Buddha Maitreya. But from within and without. But it has, and when you understand the symbol, that's why when somebody says, this person is a master, well, his inner being is a master? Could be. And listen this carefully. The physical person in this physical world can fall, can degenerate again. There are many cases. This is what we call the bodhisattva. What is the bodhisattva? The bodhisattva is the human soul, which is the third aspect of that Buddha that enters into the world. That is the only human soul. And the human soul is that we call bodhisattva. So the bodhisattva is only a vehicle. It's only a vessel. Is only a messenger. The bodhisattva is what is called the messenger, the prophet, we will say it, or that one that delivers the knowledge. Or as we will say it, as in the Islam, they state, Allah is Allah. Buddha is Buddha. The innermost is the innermost. And Muhammad is his prophet. So Muhammad, in this case, is a physical bodhisattva that delivers the message of his own God. Allah, of course, in Arabic, you know, is God. And in English, we say God. In Spanish, is Dios. God. In German, Dieu, in French. El, in Hebrew. That's why in Gnosticism we said, El is El. But many Spanish people think that when they say there is because El in Spanish means he. You think that you're saying he is he. No. El is Aleph Lamed. El is El means God is God. Or Allah is Allah. Same thing. So in this case, as we said, the Buddha is always the Buddha. He's inside. He's the master. And the Bodhisattva is just a vehicle that can fall into many mistakes. The inner Buddha never commits mistakes. It's perfect. But the Bodhisattva, the human soul, can commit many mistakes. Many errors. And it is something that we have to comprehend. The development, of course, of that inner Buddha is written in the book of Genesis. It's a story of Abraham. Abraham engendered Isaac. Isaac engendered Jacob. These three parts, that is also named in the Bible many times, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, are the three parts of the monad. Chesed, Geburah, Tiferet. Atman, Budi, Manas. Spirit, divine consciousness, and human consciousness. This is what we have to understand. Because it's coming into my mind that statement of Jesus of Nazareth. When he states, God is not God of the dead, but of the living. Did you ever hear that God says, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob? That means that that Jehovah, that represents the three primary forces above the monad, is the God of the monad. And the monad are the living. The living are the spirit, the divine consciousness, and the human consciousness. Those are the living entities that we have to develop. Doesn't mean that everybody, because people think that everybody in this world that is a human being or that is a person has those three parts fully developed. No. No. Not everybody has his inner Buddha as a master. Everybody has the Buddha nature. But to become an enlightened, a real Buddha, Maitreya, you need to be born inside with sexual magic. And the first birth is that extraction of the kundalini of the physical body and uniting that extraction with the divine consciousness in the superior worlds. And then a new master is born and starts walking towards nirvana. If he gains the fifth initiation of major mysteries, enters into nirvana. And if he renounces nirvana, then becomes a true bodhisattva that follows the path, which is really a true Buddha. Because there are many Buddhas in Asia that reach the level of Buddha, but not all of them are Buddha Maitreyas. Buddha Maitreya, only the one that renounces nirvana for the love of this humanity and continue his path until annihilating Mara and his demons and their three daughters, until cleaning completely all of his self and acquiring 100% of enlightenment. Buddha Gautama, of course, in that process, is what in Buddhism is called the three kayas. What are the three kayas? The three kayas are the three vehicles of these three primary forces, which in conjunction are Avalokitesvara. They are called the Nirmanakaya, the Sambhogakaya, and the Dharmakaya. Those are the main bodies, talking Buddhism, related with the three primary forces. The Nirmanakaya is related with Bina. The Sambhogakaya is related with Chokmah. And the Dharmakaya with Keter. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. The whole Avalokiteshvara there in conjunction. So that's what we call a Buddha Maitreya. Somebody that develops those kayas. Kaya means vehicle or body. It means that in order to develop those bodies, first, you need to reach the level of Buddha. Your innermost has to reach the fifth initiation of major mysteries. When that master reaches that, and then he starts developing all of those bodies. And the first one is the Nirmanakaya. Nobody can do that if has the ego alive. This integration of the ego. It's a process. And of course, the Buddha Gautama Sakyamuni, he reached the level of Dharmakaya. But it was a process. It's a long process of enlightenment and development. It is what we have to understand. So, we stated and we repeat. In previous lives, previous ages, or periods of manifestation, many masters acquired that level. And, unfortunately, they also lost it. This is called the fallen bodhisattvas. See the case, for instance, of this master that was born in India, who was named, or whose personality was named Krishnamurti. You remember him, right? Of course, that was the name of the personality. And we recognize him that he is a Buddha Maitreya. But he became Buddha Maitreya in previous lives. But it still was in process. You see, in process of perfection. So when some clairvoyants saw this Buddha and they discovered that he was very enlightened because he was united with his own Avalokiteshvara, they thought there was the reincarnation of Jesus, because they never knew about this knowledge. They didn't understand that Jesus represents in his life the development of Avalokiteshvara, the development of that Maitreya within. As Buddha teaches with his life, the development of that Buddha within, when you reach that level, beyond that, you need another information, another guidance. And for that, Jesus descended and taught the path of Avalokiteshvara, or the path of Christ. But it's for Buddhas, for the different levels. And this is what we have to understand. This is how Christianity and Buddha and Buddhism unite. You know? As two thumbs. The Buddha is one thumb and the other is Christ. But it's not people here. Our inner Buddha is one thumb and the other thumb is Avalokiteshvara, the Christ, which is above the Buddha. Because that Christ is the symbol of the three primary forces that are always acting in us. So we will say, for instance, what is the energy of Christ in us? The energy of Christ are the three primary forces, the sense, and the three nervous systems that we have. And the inner Buddha has to take advantage of that in order to grow up, in order to develop. And the mastery is reached by that inner Buddha. It has nothing to do with the personality. You understand that, right? Because many people think that the bodhisattva is the master. No. The bodhisattva is not the master. The master is the Buddha. The bodhisattva is only a vehicle. The bodhisattva is that serf that says, Father, if it is possible, take this chalice out of me, but not let my will be done, but thy will be done. So in other words, the bodhisattva is the one that follows the will of his inner God, his inner master. That's why it comes into my memory a passage when people asked Jesus, good master, they said. And then he says, why do you call me good? Good only God. But that's the answer of the bodhisattva, you see. Don't call me good, because good is Gedula, Hesed, the innermost, the Buddha. That's good, the Gedula. But we are only human souls, more or less perfect. But perfect, only the Father, the inner Buddha. He is perfect. And here below, we are not perfect. So, do you have questions?
Meditation, without meditation, then we abandon the work, and we don't give up the kingdom. Now, I've come across many people, you know, who are Christian, that say that they don't need meditation, all they need is prayer. But yet, each time I point out in the Bible, there's many references that say that meditation is essential. What can you say to those Christians who think that only prayer is needed?
Okay, the question is, what we can say about those people that think that prayer is the only thing that is necessary and that meditation is not necessary? Well, to pray is to talk with God. Anybody can pray. I pray often. Close my eyes and talk with my inner God, my inner spirit. And it's a conversation that we have always. This type of prayer, of course, it's good. But we have to work, as the Buddha taught us, to develop ourselves. We don't develop by praying. We develop by comprehending, by understanding our own nature, by awakening our own consciousness. Because if everything was going to be done just by praying, oh, well, that's easy. Just pray to your God, you believe in God, and that's it. Right? And everybody's will be done now. We need to work in ourselves. That's why there are the commandments. You shall not do this, you shall not do that. And we discover that in life, we always do that is prohibited. You shall not lie, but we are liars. We should not steal, in many ways we steal. In many ways that if you observe yourself, you break the law. So therefore, we need to meditate, to comprehend, in order not to break the law. When you reach perfection and you don't break the law, then you don't need to meditate. You don't need to comprehend anything. So meditation is indispensable in order to comprehend our bad behavior and how to act in a good behavior. The question is, what is emptiness related with Buddha nature? We will say, well, it's like to abandon the kingdom. To be empty means not to think, just to be here and now. Empty of mundane things. Of course, when we practice, as we said many times, self-remembering. Remember the Buddha. When you reach the Buddha level, the state of Buddha nature, you discover that the innermost does not think, because he knows. You see, that comes into the beginning of this lecture. When that disciple asks the master, do I have the Buddha nature? And the master says, no, you do not. Why? Because the stones have Buddha nature, the plants have Buddha nature, animals have Buddha nature. How come I do not have Buddha nature? And he says, because you are asking. It means that when you are in Buddha nature, you are empty. No thought. It's just enjoying that state. And of course, there's levels and levels. The higher level is to reach the total emptiness of the mind. Because in Buddhism, is the emptiness of the mind. And if you sit down and close your eyes, you will see that your mind is not empty. It's full of thoughts, images, foolishness. How are you going to acquire that emptiness? is a goal. It's a process. But if you observe, you have a lot of devils within your mind. And of course, even if you pray, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, a devil praying there, because you have a lot of devils. But if you work in meditation and you acquire the total emptiness of your mind, then you acquire the Buddha nature. And in that way, it's easy to be in the emptiness or in the Buddha nature of a stone, of a plant, of an animal, of a world, because Buddha is everywhere. Means that emptiness, which is the Buddha nature, is everywhere. But if we think and we always fill the mind with thoughts, etc., it's difficult to experience that because it's beyond the mind.
I came across this student. I asked him about he's also a nothing instructor. I asked him about the meditation. And he told me that, you know, he only had 3 or 4 experiences. That's it. You know, he was discouraged because he didn't have more. So how important is it just to at least have one experience to continue working? And how important is it to develop patience when meditating?
Well, patience, the question is how important it is to develop patience while meditating. Because many Gnostics, they are always discouraged because they don't have experiences beyond the mind or beyond the physical body. Well, the answer is that you have to practice. And to be remembering yourself second after second, moment after moment, not only during meditation, but in the whole life. When you're working, when you are at home, when you are with your friends, even when you are seated watching TV, you have to remember yourself all the time. And when you go to meditate, of course, you continue that practice and doing the effort to quiet your mind in order to acquire an experience, in order to attain this satori. And usually, let me tell you, in order to acquire this type of experiences, if you are there meditating and longing for having that type of experience, it's very difficult to acquire that, because then it's a desire, somebody within you that wants that, it's the mind that wants that experience. My advice is to sit down, to meditate, and just to control your mind, to be aware of you, of your thoughts or your emotions. Study yourself, meditate in that. You will see how, without any expectation, your consciousness will experience the Buddha nature in different levels without longing for it. But the problem is always when we desire that, you know what I mean? That desire is there and is of the kingdom. In other words, in order to experience Buddha nature, you have to abandon the kingdom. You cannot experience Buddha nature if the kingdom is, you go, some people go and meditate and sometimes no sounds in places where there is no sound and they sit down for hours and try to experience a satori, samadhi. But they took all of their kingdom with them. And they are sitting there, of course, making a mudra. Very well seated down, straight spinal column, and they are there with the closed eyes, and all of their mundane things are inside of them. Their kingdom is completely there. They don't fight against it. They don't try to quiet down, to comprehend their kingdom. You have, in order to abandon the kingdom, you have to comprehend your kingdom. And believe me, you have a long time in order to understand that, because that's too much. You have a lot. Just study any kingdom. It's always a queen. It's always a king. It's always a lot of people that are working in the kingdom. There's animals, things. And when you close your eyes, you have to understand and comprehend your kingdom. Because how you're going to abandon something that you don't have? That you don't have conscious of that. In order to abandon something, you have to be conscious of that. When you abandon consciously your kingdom, and then you enter into your own reality, which is your Buddha nature. And sometimes it's just for seconds. I remember an experience that I had when I was meditating, of course, and trying to abandon my kingdom. And a lot of garbage was coming into my mind and comprehending. And I was, of course, very tired of comprehending all the things that were coming into my mind. And said, another thing, what is this? Oh, yeah, this is the thing that, you know, and you are there remembering yourself. All of a sudden, without any expectation, I felt going out from my body like that, but like a bolt of light, out. And then I was in one place, and when I saw that, I was so wondrous, so surprised of that beautiful thing that I was seeing, that immediately my mind below tried to analyze, what is this? And when we're trying to analyze, immediately I felt like the genie of the lamp going out into the bottle again. And I said, oh, my mind made me lose that experience. And then I was in, because I was sitting in my bed, you know, seated there, and I was jumping in my bed, like trying to go out. But doesn't matter how many jumps did I there, I'm still there in the physical body. I said, oh, and of course frustrated, you know what I mean? Because why did I think? I shouldn't think in that moment, you know, to extend that experience. And you see there, after I was jumping there trying to go out now, that means that the effort doesn't work there. And the only thing that I was doing before having that experience was analyzing myself. I was not expecting to go into Satori. I was just simple analyzing all the garbage that I had within. And remembering myself always, don't forget it. Analyzing, and suddenly, it just always comes like that. Every experience comes all of a sudden, without any expectation, out of the blue. Do you need another word for that? Okay, do you have another question? Yes? No? Okay. Thank you very much. And have a good weekend.
The presentation of this lecture was made possible by donations from listeners like you. Help humanity discover the sacred wisdom that leads to liberation from suffering. Make a donation to Telema Press. Visit GnosticTeachings.org for details. Thank you for your support. May all beings be happy.